Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery, leadership revolution, and life success. Learn something new from our mentoring conversation today.
There are several things that I hadn't thought of before until Nancy asked me two or three questions. And one threw me completely, which was about how my parents treated me and what impact that may have had on the way I brought up my kids. And that is something I hadn't really thought of. So there was some thought here that I was not anticipating, but I'm glad it happened.
Hey, it's Monday. Guess what? You're tuning in to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. Glad you're here. Priscilla Vang is our sponsor for today's mentoring conversation. She owns a franchise called Payroll Vault in St. Paul, Minnesota. And she's discovered that through working with clients, finding tax solutions, that they need a payroll service that they can count on. She has taken her client-focused skills, accountancy degree, and technology-driven software tools to help business owners redefine how they do payroll. Why don't you give her a call at 651-783-2509 and find out how she can help you redesign how you do payroll. Just click the button on the homepage of wementor.com and you'll see a button to directly connect you with Payroll Vault and Priscilla. So we've been having two scrumptious conversations with Peter Beaumont. Hi, Peter.
Scrumptious, huh? Hi.
So what did you think about the first two mentoring conversations?
It's fascinating, actually, because, you know, we all like talking about ourselves, I suppose. I think the first session, I was probably more nervous than I thought I would be.
Okay.
And so you got me warmed up. So, so the second session was better. I think what was really interesting for me is when you start talking off a script that somebody knows something about you, you start finding out there's a thread that you probably didn't realize was there before. Mm. And so there were a couple of things that surprised me or I linked together, which I hadn't previously done.
And tell me, what is that?
Now you put me on the spot, but one of them was how the relationship stuff that I'd been doing early in my career suddenly came to fruition later, and it all clicked into place when I was on my own helping put the Coke business together. My ability to form relationships, which really are resources in many ways, suddenly. You know, I was operating on my own and it didn't concern me very much. So, because I knew that I could find the right people to do the job that I needed. I had the confidence to do it.
Yeah.
And I'd learned the ability. And the other thing that I think that I learned was in talking about all this was that treating people fairly is something I've always believed in. I have a high moral compass. Mm-hmm. I'm one of these people who believes in this world that, you know, that things are fair. How foolish of me. Because as soon as you start believing that, you're always wronged.
Yeah, so I know what you mean.
You know
yeah.
what I mean by that? Mm-hmm. That's taken me a while to learn, probably only the last few years, to be honest.
Okay.
Because I've always held on to the belief that, you know, you should be aiming at perfect, and of course that doesn't exist either. But at least you aim for it. But don't be, if you're 80% there, don't be worried about getting to the other 20%. So those two things, I think, have weaved through what I've done, and I didn't really realize that until now.
I see. Excellent.
Let's not do too many of these.
Too much self-analysis?
Possibly.
Yes. All right. Well, if you don't already know or can't remember, Peter Beaumont is the founder and principal of ConXN Consulting. He's in the midst of revising a book he authored in 2014 called The Relationship Roadmap. And he's got real life experience, you know, from all over the world. And you can see throughout the book of his compassion toward building relationships. And if you can bring that degree of kind of strategically thinking about how I can connect people together and resources and how I can build on these relationships over a period of time, they seem like for you, Peter, that they're relationships that kind of somehow you kept connecting with people. Mm-hmm. And seeing them, even though you're in different parts of the world. Mm-hmm. Did you deliberately keep in touch with people? Or if so, how did you do that?
It's really perceptive. I'll tell you why. Because people have acknowledged that I keep up relationships with people over time when other people would have allowed them to lapse.
Yeah.
And I think it's because I collect friends as I go along. Mm-hmm. And why should that change? So I've got an incredible Christmas card list, which is now digital, but it goes to over 250 people, right? Mm. People that are not just acquaintances, they're people that I do have genuine relationships with, because Christmas is special. It's not supposed to be just, so there's the business list and there's the personal list, right?
Yeah.
So, but there was something else that you when you asked me a question, not that long ago, that I suddenly realized permeated what's been important to me in what I do. And that is that first spell at Coca-Cola, I worked for a boss who was, have you heard of John Cleese?
Yeah.
Right? John Cleese, the Silly Walks,
yes.
And Monty Python.
Right.
Right? Well, he looked a little bit like John Cleese, and so much so that he would do his silly walk around the office, and you know, and we would be in a restaurant with a client, and he would bark, you know, he'd throw his voice, ventriloquism, he'd throw his voice as if a dog was over the other side of the restaurant. Everybody would look around. I mean, he was a practical joker, very funny.
Yeah.
Very British. Name was Ben Knight. He shot for Great Britain as an Olympic sport. He could shoot from 1,000 yards and was in the top, you know, top echelons. But one of the things he taught me that has stayed with me forever was humor. In those days, business was very stilted in many ways. You had a certain behavior. You always wore a tie in those days. Behavior was, especially if you were British, was very formal in many ways. Ben taught me that business can be fun, and you can it can be humorous at it too. And I'd flirted with that at school. That was my way of dodging the bullying sometimes. I'd deflect by using humor. And I think it permeated me not being very strong academically, because I wasn't interested in it. But the interesting thing is I did become very strong academically as soon as I knew what I wanted to do.
Right. Having a goal.
You know, so if you remember, we talked about, I went to career as analyst, and that's what switched on for me. Okay, I can retake those five. I'll get them. I did, by the way. I can take those two levels. I can get them, and I did. So yeah. I got focused on it. But during that time, the humor I used to use very much as a deflection from my, let's say, unacademic prowess. But then it was reinforced again by Ben. And it's always been very much part of my, the way I behave with people. And I think it's helped me build relationships, because I take the sting out of things.
Sure.
It helps collaborate people. You know, they feel more together when there's some humor. You can break the ice very quickly.
Right, yeah.
And so that's...
it's hard to be mad at someone you're laughing with.
Yeah. At, yes, but not with. And so this goes back to, you know, my early career where I wanted to get into journalism because I love communicating.
Yeah.
It's a very, it's something I think I'm good at it. This is probably why I like speaking. But what I've learned is I'm better at speaking than I am actually at writing. I express myself much more easily.
Yeah. Well, it's a different skill set, and it just takes time to kind of...
It's very difficult, to your point, it's very difficult. And I write a lot of blogs. I've done 103 blogs on articles on LinkedIn now, and for example, and they've got steadily better. But where I've struggled is expressing my humor in the written word.
Oh, sure.
I find
I know that is hard.
And it's so difficult. And so I'll throw. So I look at it and I look at it again, and this doesn't express the way I really feel.
Right.
I'm not making the points I'd like to. And so that's something I'm still working on, because I think it's a strength of mine in communication to be able to make people feel better about themselves because they laugh, right?
Right, right.
And it's not cheap laughter. It's, you know, it's laughter
it's
because
genuine.
It's genuine.
Yeah.
It's sincere.
Right, yeah. Well, working with an editor helps. Like, my husband edits every podcast.
Uh-huh.
Because I just need another set of eyes, because I'm trying so hard to like capture the essence of each conversation, that I have a certain perspective of looking at it. And I don't know, there's never been an episode that's been perfect.
Well,
right.
We're back to what we were saying earlier, you know, perfection is unusual.
Right.
If you can get as close to it as possible, good.
Yeah, well, I don't go for perfection, but I try to like get it so that people, I know that people will kind of well receive it well, or that they won't get caught up in how I said something so that they don't get my point.
Right.
You know, that's the finesse that comes with writing over a period of time.
Well, I think the other thing you said about, you know, you have somebody else look at it.
Yeah.
That's what consultants do.
Right.
You know, we get so into our own thing.
Yeah.
We're so, and we all know this.
Right.
That we don't see, you know, that famous expression, we don't see the wood for the trees, right?
Yeah.
Or the trees for the wood. But anyway, whichever way around it is, you get what I mean.
Right. Well, yeah, you get so enmeshed and you're so close to your venture.
Yeah.
And so getting some other feedback from other people, although it's not always fun to hear another person's perspective. I mean, it's necessary. You know, we all need to hear things if we want to grow.
Right.
That will help us become better.
Yeah, I think somebody said to me once that, you know, the value of consultants are they ask the questions that you haven't even thought of.
Right. That's exactly it.
So yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they don't necessarily fix anything, but they ask the questions that you should be asking yourself,
mm-hmm.
and then you've got the ability to fix those.
Yeah, once there's an awareness that you've created with the question when you're consulting, then a person can sit with it and kind of toy with some new ideas about how to think about things.
Absolutely.
So, take us to the point in your career where you finished out with Coca-Cola. And you moved over to the United States.
Okay. Two very quick stepping stones to get there. So I moved from the Middle East to Vienna, Austria.
Mm.
I was asked to take over a new role, which was looking after the McDonald's business. They were expanding very quickly into international markets. We were helping them do that. And so I was responsible for 29 countries based in Vienna. Long story of why it was Vienna, but it was Vienna. And I'm glad it was. I had 10 really good years there. During the latter part of that 10 years, I met met Shelley, my second wife, and fell in love with her. She was based in Atlanta, working for the Coca-Cola company. What a coincidence. And she came out.
Atlanta, Georgia.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
And so she came out, moved overseas with me. Yeah, we had a long-distance relationship, 5,000 miles for a while, so we were pleased to get through that. And then she moved over to Vienna with me. And within a year, no, just over a year, we had Carly, K-A-R-L-Y. It's the joining of two, my mother's name, Mary, and my and her mother's name, Carol. So we joined them together. It became Carly.
K-A-R-L-Y.
With a K, though.
Yeah.
K-A-R-L-Y. So we had Carly very quickly. So Shelley's travel got curtailed because we were going everywhere together. She went to Moscow with me and to Czech and to Hungary and to Budapest. And so it was exciting times. And then we had Pierce 3 years later. Yeah. So then I left the Coca-Cola company and joined a company in Germany, which was an agency which looked after the McDonald's business. And they wanted me to be general manager of that agency. It was a team of about 12 people called Creator, Australian-owned, privately owned company, about a $600 million turnover. And that was great. I went down there and at the request of the McDonald's chief marketing officer, actually, he just told them to fire the previous general manager and then found out I was leaving Coke and asked if I would come down and run it, which I did. And I did that for about 4 or 5 years. And then Creator said, listen, we like what you're doing. We'd like you to come over and do the same thing in Chicago. So they promoted me and moved me over as vice president in charge of digital marketing. And then within a couple of years, I got promoted to senior vice president, looking after client services for North America. So that, you know, the move to Chicago was a big move from Germany because the, well, first of all, my wife was incredibly excited because instead of a 16-hour journey to Winona, which is where she comes from, it was a 5-hour drive from Chicago. So no stops. And so she was delighted. So that move, that was 2008. So we arrived the same time as Obama became president.
Okay.
And we moved into a suburb called Clarendon Hills, which is about, I don't know, 15 or 16 miles west of Chicago. And the reason we were out there is because my office was about 2 minutes from McDonald's headquarters. And I ended up getting an office inside McDonald's headquarters. They gave me my own booth there. So, which was the only agency. So that was, it caused a bit of consternation. So I only had it for a year, but it got me invited to a lot of meetings that you would normally get invited to because you were actually in the building. It's like, Peter, come and join us for this meeting. So that's what got me to the US. And that was 2008. 2012, I got two offers from ex-clients at McDonald's. A guy that, Johan Jevo, who's Danish, now in Switzerland. We've been close since 1994. He'd just joined Intel and he'd been made in charge of partner marketing as well as the design and creative. And we met in Sao Paulo in Brazil. And he said, what have you been doing with yourself? So I told him. And he said, I may want you to come and talk to my team about what you've been doing because they're a great marketing team, but they're not great at building relationships or helping understand how to navigate their way through with clients to get the marketing funds used effectively. So I said, okay. Anyway, again, cut through that very quickly. 2 weeks' time, I went and talked to his team and they wanted me to work with them. And I said, I'm working with an agency. I can't suddenly drop everything.
Yeah.
2 weeks later, somebody from Wrigley called me and a similar kind deal, coming down and talk to me and we'd be interested in having you work with us. If you put those two together, it was most people leave companies and form their own companies and then work up. The most ideal thing whenever you want to go into your own business is to bridge it. So you already have clients ready that want to hire you as soon as you. And this is what I had.
Yeah.
And so 2012, I left Creator and went, basically had two clients straight away, really nice clients, and kept them for about 3 or 4 years. 2013, a year after, 18 months after that, we moved up here to Minnesota.
Okay.
My wife had a job with Coke. They were downsized. And she said, right, you know, you got your own business. You only just need to be close to an airport. I can find another job in the Twin Cities pretty quickly, given my skill set. Let's move. And so we moved up here in the harshest winter you guys had had. For a long time, it was cold. It was minus 25. There was snow that year. I mean, it really was one of the harshest winters on record. And I asked her why we were moving up here. I mean, it was like an igloo as far as I was concerned.
Sure.
I mean, it was the tundra multiplied by 25,000. But anyway, I've come to enjoy being here. So that's the backstory of how we ended up living here. Yeah.
I see.
So I brought my consultancy up with me. And specialized.
You wrote that book at the time.
Yeah, I wrote the book 2014, and it was on the back of what connection really does. Connection is about connecting. And so it's a play on words, and it's about building relationships and how best to do those. And what I'd specialized with Intel and Wrigley in was they both had very large clients, and they needed to go very deep and wide in the relationships to get themselves from being a trusted advisor up to being, from a vendor somebody treated just as a vendor up to a trusted advisor. And there's five stages to get there. And that's what I took these companies through. And I'd developed something called a Relationship Roadmap, which is the title of the book. And it was a web-based way of mapping relationships. So that was my core. I've still got that. I do less work with it. What I'm now doing is working for a company called Resultants for Business, which is where we help small business owners do much better strategic execution. And two things we really try and help them with were three: owner freedom. And by giving them owner freedom, we have to give them better strategic execution. So they're free to delegate a lot more of what they used to do, stop reaching down into the business, let other people do it. And then the second area is build the value of their business, build multipliers so that they can then, when they're ready to sell, they can sell it much better, maybe sooner than they were expecting because it's a lot more profitable than it was.
Sure.
And so it gives them that full owner freedom that they want.
Are any of the companies you work with going public?
No, very, very few of them are. There's a couple we've worked with that have, but most of them are in what I would call the $2 to $60 million range, privately owned, sometimes family, but certainly, small businesses, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of them. See, a lot of people have heard about Traction, a book called Traction, which was written quite a few years ago. And EOS was born out of that, which is Entrepreneurial Operating System. I think there's two reasons that it's taken off here. One is that there's about 3,500 companies in Minnesota between $2 and $60 million turnover. That's a very high density for small businesses. Number one, so it's there's a lot of businesses.
So there's a room for there's the market is bigger.
The market's bigger than a lot of states. We also have the other end of the scale, of course, where we've got the Best Buys and the Targets, and so we've got a real contrast, but we've got everything in between too. So it's a very rich area to practice something like entrepreneurial operating systems, which really is all the systems that I've learned at Coca-Cola and Philip Morris and at the agency, much bigger companies. EOS just boils it down and makes it much more simple for an entrepreneur to actually practice. And I actually like working more with entrepreneurs than I probably did with the larger companies. It's a bit like, as you know, I do soccer coaching.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like the same thing. You immediately see the results of what you put in.
Yeah.
And people are really grateful for it.
Yeah.
Instead of all the politicking that goes on with large companies. So, that's what I enjoy.
Yeah, excellent. And you're with entrepreneurs too. Making the transition to freedom is really challenging because they're more loners and they're the vision, so they want to keep their fingers enough in the pot so that they can keep creating and implementing new ideas.
That's a really good point, because what you're trying to do for them is a lot of the visionaries get diving into stuff that they really shouldn't be doing. They become integrators, but they're not very good at integrating. Otherwise, they'd never have started the company in the first place. So what we need to do is give them the freedom to go back to what they're really good at. And visionaries know how to expand a company, know how to move it. Integrators, we implement, we don't integrate. So we go in and implement a system, and then they have to put an integrator, or we find an integrator for them in the system or outside and bring them in to help them run the business.
So somebody helps them make that transition.
Correct.
Right.
Right. And a lot of entrepreneurs hit the ceiling and I'm not sure why.
And do you think that they max out their skill set?
No, I think what happens is they start getting into areas they shouldn't. There's a guy called Dan Sullivan who's made a career out of calling something called unique ability. We all have a unique ability. And what we should do as much as possible in our lives is, instead of worrying about the weaknesses, which we all want to improve upon, we should play to our strengths, do the things that we're really good at. And that's what often happens with small businesses. They forget their unique abilities, start getting into areas where they're not particularly strong. Suddenly the vision goes out of the business and they start imploding because they're doing things they're not terribly good at and they won't delegate it.
Yeah. And, so they end up hating the business then.
Well, in a way. And, you know, we all know entrepreneurs, they're not very good at being told how to do things, which is why they became entrepreneurs.
Right.
Right? They're not very good at listening to authority.
You say right, we go left.
Correct. And it's part of the makeup, right?
Which
is why they've been successful.
Yeah.
So part of our challenge is being fearless about saying, no, this actually is probably not the best thing for your business. The other thing we try and do is, if you start trying to tell them what to do, you antagonize them immediately because why are you telling me what to do? Yeah. I built this business. You haven't. You're not here day to day.
Yeah.
So you have to couch it in a way, which is why I think my relationship basis has helped a lot, which is, listen, when I came across this working for so-and-so and so, this is how we looked.
Yeah. So you develop the relationship first and the rapport, and so they trust your judgment.
Well, and you don't tell them what they should be doing. You say, this is what happened when I had a situation like this. And they'll go, oh, so what you're saying is that's similar to what I've got now. We need to change.
Yeah. And then you've got the rapport to
and they come to
make the transition.
Yeah. Okay.
Excellent. Well, we could go on and on.
Probably will.
Right. Because you're good at relationships. And so am I.
True.
Good. Well, great. Well, thank you so much. You're a delight. I really appreciate the work that you're doing, and I'm glad that you're shifting into working with entrepreneurs and relating, transitioning all your wealth of experience into a needed area with entrepreneurs. They really need what you've already been through with so many other companies.
Thanks. I hope so.
Yeah. Good. All right. And thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, mon frère, brother from another mother. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I appreciate all your feedback always. So please email me at nancy@wementor.com. I'd love to hear from you. You've got some show ideas or some feedback. I am open. All right. So take what you've learned from our conversation today and enjoy the week. Work hard, and we'll see you next Monday.